Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, the home of cycling in association with Lacca Bicycle Insurance. I'm Graham Wilgos, and Brad, just you and me today, back in the pub.
Yeah, back here after a great pub the other day with Pippa.
Really good pub. Super. With Pippa. Brilliant to have her on.
Great. I think it was the best one we've done, and lots of positive feedback. So thank you for everyone who took the time to listen.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll see Pippa again in the near future. Today, though, two very different races going on, both won by this season's, this rebooted season, I should say, most impressive fast men. Yeah. Let's start with the Giro d'Italia, stage 11. Largely flat, 182 kilometres. It was always going to be one for the sprinters, so it proved. Arnaud Démare.
Yeah, fast man. 15 wins since August.
Awesomely impressive rebooted season for him. And he's on course for the most impressive season of his career. Four wins at the Giro.
Yeah.
First man to do that since we saw Gaviria do it a couple of years ago.
Yeah, first Frenchman to do it since Eno, I think.
Correct.
Well, he's...
But he looks untouchable.
He does. Well, he is untouchable. I mean, he's... Sagan's just not been able to get near him. Although they got close the other day. It was a photo finish to determine that one. But Peter's back to where we all know he was capable of riding. Yesterday's ride was... it just blew everyone away, didn't it, really? That was like the Peter of old winning Flanders and stuff.
It was the Peter of old, but one sort of one for the ages. You know, you've got to imagine when he looks back on his career, that's one of the ones that will really stand out, given the situation in which he's done it as well, after waiting so long for a win.
I think the length of time he'd gone without a win, maybe the criticism that he'd come under, you know, in terms of that lack of winning. And it's just great to see, isn't it? We see his progression. We've got to see it up hand first and foremost, you know, because... the level he started at the start of the tour to where he is now is quite two different riders, and it's brilliant to see. And he's not done yet. You know, he was hot on the wheels of Démare today and finished second, so that points competition is still very close.
He's 36 seconds behind in the race for the Malia Ciclamino. So you say today he was right on Démare's wheel. Sagan chose to go right, Démare chose to go left. Sagan made a bad choice in the sprint, and you'd imagine if he'd have followed him and gone left.
He might have come close.
He might have come a lot closer.
He went, he got to half a bike, didn't he, at the finish line? But he went on Gaviria's wheel, which was bizarre. Yeah, he backed the wrong wheel, really, and it's sort of unlike him, really, to you know, on the form guide, he would have gone with Démare.
Yeah.
But I think he just goes to show that Gaviria still feared, really.
Was that a moment of hesitation from Sagan, perhaps?
No, I think it's Gaviria still feared, and no one underestimates him. You know, the Gaviria of old would have jumped and won that, and Sagan thought he was going to do that. And when he realised that Gaviria wasn't going anywhere, he jumped left straight away. And it was instantaneous because Gaviria stopped as soon as he went and gave up.
Before we go any further, here's how Rob Hatch called it for us on Eurosport.
There's left turn number one, taken by Scottson. All of the major players in here. Left turn number two, 500 metres to go. And they come into the final straight. And it's going to be interesting to see who launches first. Look out for Démare, sitting in that purple jersey in third. On his wheel in the white, you can see it's Fernando Gaviria. Then Sagan looking for two out of two. He's in the black and green. Hodges following him, the young Colombian as well. And Zabel is struggling to make up places. Then you have Elia Viviani. Oldani's in, and it's Culpama. And here goes Gaviria. He's designed to launch it early. Gaviria on the left as we look at it, but Démare's looking strong. Démare's going again all the way to the line. It's four up for Arnaud Démare, and nobody can get near him. They left it late, they let the others do the work, and Groupama FDJ have done it once again. Arnaud Démare is unbeatable at this Giro d'Italia.
It's given how hot Démare is now. Four wins, and you know, he could win two, he could end up with six looking at the stages we've got left. Why didn't he go to the tour?
That's a good question. I guess because they backed the team with Pinot.
Yeah.
He'd finished second of the Dauphiné.
Yeah, so they chose to go
they
all
had
out
to.
For
I mean,
Pinot.
You know, the teams were reduced, weren't they, to eight riders? I don't think, and I think Démare commands a lot of riders around him, as we've seen this week, in terms of doing that lead out. And I think they got let down by Pino again, really, didn't they? And they went with a team to win the GC after last year. Because you can imagine the reaction they'd have got in France had they backed Demar. They've got to back Pino, really. Otherwise, he may leave the team. But I don't see. I haven't seen Demar complain about that or question it at all. No.
If anything, he just looks every time he's interviewed after a race at the moment, and well, particularly after
he looks
winning.
Happy, doesn't he?
He seems like the happiest man in the world. And there's a real joy to him, which is actually brilliant.
Looks like he's on cloud nine, really, and he's really grateful to his team. You see, he waited around a lot to see his teammates at the finish. Yeah, it's nice to see riders that really kind of pay back the team and thank them. And he seems a nice lad, Demar. I've never actually spoke to him or anything like that. He's just, I remember he won the Worlds, actually. And when Cav won the professional race,
yeah,
he won the Espoir race in Copenhagen back in 2011. He's a great rider. And he's not done yet in this Giro. I can see him winning six.
He's not done yet. And if he does win six, you've got to imagine he'll take the sprinter's jersey. However, do you think Sagan can catch him?
Well, Sagan's going to go tomorrow again. Yeah. I can see Sagan doing what he did the other day.
Yeah, another one for the breakaway tomorrow.
And he's going to want to put a march on that tomorrow and put some distance and gain some points between him and Demar.
Do you think we'll see any change in the GC tomorrow?
Fuglsang has got to go again. I think we could see him trying after his loss with the puncture.
Lost time yesterday. Punctured on the descent, very little he could do about it, and had to wait around a while. So he is now 11th on GC at 2:20.
So you're
looking at, obviously Almeida is still in pink, Kelderman at 34 seconds in second, Bilbao 43 seconds, Pots of Evo 57 seconds, Nibali 1:01 second. So he's got a lot of time to make up on the top five there.
Yeah.
Is the pressure on, or is there start to become a feeling of a sense you've got nothing to lose?
Well, there is that, but I think he'll be confident in his ability, because the other day, was it a couple of mountain stages ago where he kind of put time into Nibali? He knows he's got that to come. I think he's got an element of nothing to lose, for sure, but I guess there's also an element of when is this race going to go the whole distance? Because he's got time. He's got a week and a half now.
To
still do something about that. I don't think he'll be panicking it. He hasn't got a team either, is he, at the moment?
Well, he's
seriously
missing,
reduced.
Losing Vlasov and Superman Lopez so early in the race won't have done him any favours.
He always seems to do it on his own anyway. They're not really a team that you see dominant on the front like we used to see in a lot of other teams. So, I mean, the field's seriously reduced. No Mitchelton, no Jumbo. I can see Fuglsang trying something tomorrow just to have a move, because it's going to be so difficult. And it's one of them stages that you're going to be... Wherever you are through the field, whether you're off the front or at the back, you're going to be making the same effort tomorrow. There's no easy day tomorrow for anyone.
And do we expect to see anything more from Teo? So we've seen him riding at the front. He's at 2:45, 14th on GC.
Teo, this is brilliant from Teo. He's almost gone unnoticed a little bit, isn't he?
He's kind of managed to sneak under the radar so far.
Yeah, and I can see Teo sneaking into the top 10 if he carries on at this rate.
So you mentioned Mitchelton Scott. Obviously, the Simon Yates positive. It looked like he was in trouble on Etna. Now we know why. He likely had it before the race even began. Now that more of the team have tested positive, Jumbo-Visma also out. Richard Pluger, just to mention him, he was talking about the decision to withdraw Jumbo-Visma at the 11th hour, almost minutes before that stage began. He was hospitalised for 8 days in March with COVID. And he says he still isn't 100% when he's playing sport. So you can understand his decision to try to protect his riders.
Just took a stance that he probably wants most teams to adopt and take a bit more responsibility. He talks about behaviour a lot. Interesting, Michael Matthews tested positive, didn't he?
He did, but then he subsequently tested negative.
Negative a day later. So it shows you how inaccurate the tests are. It's not 100%, is it?
It's not 100%. And with the Yates test and Mitchelton Scott with them having two or three other members of their team subsequently test positive 3 or 4 days behind, my fear is that you now might see more teams currently with negative tests in 3 or 4 days. If Yates has been amongst that peloton and other members of other teams have been amongst the peloton who have tested positive, are we looking at, not to be too dramatic, but are we looking at what is effectively a ticking time bomb here?
Well, that I think that's the danger now with this race, isn't it? It's suddenly become a real thing now, isn't it? We didn't really talk about it during the Tour de France. And
we almost forgot about it during the Tour.
Yeah, because
we sort of forgot about how lucky we were to forget about it as well.
Pluger, he sort of noted that, didn't he? That it seemed a lot more stringent in France and less stringent in Italy.
Yeah.
And he's very relaxed, he said. And,
well, the sports minister of Italy has even said, you know, it's not really a concern for him at the moment, which seems like he's underplaying it, to say the least.
You know, this race is looking in jeopardy as every day goes past, really. And I think everyone's getting tested again in the next couple of days, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see how many more come back positive, because this race is in real danger now. I think if there's more tests than positive tests, then I think, yeah, it's fine.
How far does it have to go? How many teams have to pull out until we get to the point where we don't really have a race on?
I don't know.
What's the tipping point here? 100 riders, like we saw. So Paris-Nice, for example, we saw less than 100 riders in the peloton by the time they got to
Nice. Yeah,
I don't
know. I mean, is that from... I don't know. I don't know what the race organisers will view that as. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. You'd imagine it would be after we get stopped before we get to that point, because there's a serious problem if that's the case.
It's not a great way to go. So taking the Michelin Scott example, we've seen Simon Yates test positive and we've seen the team withdraw. But before they did that, we've seen a positive test and then the rest of the team tested each day negative, negative, negative. And then all of a sudden we've seen three or four of them test positive.
Yeah.
And that's got to be a concern for the rest of the peloton and the rest of the teams taking part in the race at the moment.
Yeah, I think we've seen that there's a delayed sort of onset with it, isn't there, really?
Yeah.
Which is...
Because it could be flying under the radar.
Yeah,
at the
you could have it and not know for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And that's kind of... And it's quite worrying that the people that were around Simon at the time obviously may have tested a day later and tested negative. But it wasn't until 3 or 4 days later that it showed signs enough to be test positive. So,
and then
it's worrying. And that's why I kind of think how many will go positive in this next batch.
Yeah. And going back to the Matthews example, testing positive.
Is it accurate? Then,
yeah. Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed and we'll be back with more from the Bradley Wiggins Show right after this.
Lacquer's collective cover is made especially for cyclists, for life on and off your bike. Lacquer has flipped outdated traditional insurance on its head with no more fixed upfront premiums. Instead, your monthly contributions are based on the collective's claims that month. Your max monthly price is capped, but the savings are all yours. Plus, 80% of your money goes straight back into the collective, fixing, replacing, and helping. And the other 20% keeps their wheels spinning. It's as simple as that. And when things go bad, Lacquer's got your back. Claims are handled by experts and usually agreed within a day, with no depreciation or excess. They've ditched annual contracts locking you in. With Lacquer, if you want to leave, you can, anytime. Head over to www.lacquer.co, where new customers can get £10 credit by signing up today with the discount code WIGGINS.
Welcome back to the Bradley Wiggins Show, sponsored by Lacquer Bicycle Insurance. Brad, the other race going on today, Schelde Prijs.
Yeah, that's Cav's first ever professional victory.
His first ever in 2007,
yeah.
his breakthrough.
Yeah.
So the unofficial Sprinters World Championships, obviously it's known as.
Yeah, and he was there today. And
it was good to see him there today.
It was great.
And we saw him in the break today.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw his interview. Did you see his interview before the start?
Yeah, so speaking before the start today, he attributed his emotions after Sunday's race to the fact that...
There was rumours at the start, wasn't there, on Sunday, that these may be cancelled. So
yeah, exactly.
I think the emotion ran away with him. And as he said, he wears his heart on his sleeve. And I think we've got that interview now, haven't we, to play?
Mark Cavendish, what happened on Sunday? We were very surprised.
I think, look, a lot of emotion. There's rumours in there. At the start of the race, that the rest of the race is going to be cancelled. Obviously, Belgium had the government had a meeting on Monday about, you know, the restrictions over coronavirus, and it suddenly dawned on me I don't have next year sorted yet, and it dawned on me, you know, it could be the last race of the season and potentially my career, you know, and obviously I've never I wear my heart on my sleeve, I always do, and especially racing here in Belgium, you know. Here at Schelde Prijs was my first win as professional, and I was looking forward to this race, and I was enjoying racing in Belgium. I love the Belgian people, I love the racing, it's pure racing, it's like when I was a kid again, you know, and I still don't have next year sorted, and with with maybe the possibility the races weren't carrying on, you know, it was suddenly realising that it could be my last race.
But you can't stop like this. You are the greatest sprinter of all time. You can't stop without an honour.
I don't have a desire to stop. I don't want to stop. I love this sport. I give my life to this sport. And I'd like to continue riding my bike. I think that's it, really.
But the last few years have been very difficult for you.
Yeah, but relative, you know, 80% of bike riders don't win a race in their career. You know, I think I'm fortunate. I'm looked at that if I don't win, it's a problem. But in 2016, I made a jump to give someone back to the sport. I worked with the charity Quebec. I looked at using what I've done in the sport to give back the sport I love, to see it grow in the UK, to see kids riding, to see people riding, loving the sport like this. I know there's more than winning to give to the sport. You know, of course I want to win, but unfortunately it's how it is that if I'm second, it's looked at bad, whereas if another rider is second, it's possibly good. You know.
But fingers crossed that we see you back next year.
Thank you very much. I hope so. We see what happens. But it's nice to be here at Skelder Place, my first professional win here in 2007, and to see the race go on, I'm super happy to be here.
So the other thing we saw from Cav today of note is that he took his frame number off mid-race and put it in his pocket. So we understand that he eventually gave it to a fan with a kilometre to go. But it's little gestures like that that make you think he really is winding down here.
Yeah, I'm from the feeling I get is he's been well and truly f***ed over by people he never expected to get f***ed over by.
That's come as a surprise. Perhaps.
I think so. I don't think you expect it in cycling, do you? Or don't expect it when you've had the career he's had. But negotiations are still going on, I think. But maybe that's a smokescreen that he hasn't actually got anything. And I picked up little bits in that interview today that kind of suggest that as well. And if it, obviously after Sunday, Sunday will be his last race then, will it? Is that the kind of...
Tour of Flanders on Sunday. But he's also looking at the 3 days of Japan next week. So they're both on his schedule.
He's still racing, but as of yet, doesn't look like he's got anything. And I don't think... Bahrain are going to sign him again.
It doesn't look like it. It doesn't look like he's got a team sorted for next year. You were imploring Dave B to sign him up for...
I could see Dave doing something like that, really, because, you know, Dave thinks a lot of Cav, and I could see Dave signing him, but, I mean, I don't know, really. It's just... it's a business they're in now, isn't it? And there's probably no space for emotion in that, really, but who knows?
It looked like he'd given it all he'd got today. And he was almost helped to the end by one of the CCC riders.
Was he?
Yeah, he's given a little push.
Yeah, I missed that bit.
Well, 10 laps of a 17.3-kilometre circuit. As you say, that the road towards the end, uneven, and therefore there was, yet again, another horrible crash. August Jensen from Rewal Securitas was the man who went down. He clipped Pascal Ackermann's back wheel as Ackermann started to move through the bunch for the finishing sprint.
Yeah.
Jensen picked himself up in the end. Everyone was okay. A couple of other riders went down with him, and that was good to see. I mean, it was good to see that everyone picked themselves up and they were okay. Before we go any further on that, Brad, here's how Carlton called it for us on Eurosport.
It's Philipson in a few moments' time. Merlier is there against the Hornings, but Caleb Ewan has reached out for glory. Got a tumble as well. Big one as well. Ryder knocked down by the looks of it. And here comes Caleb Ewan. He's going to take the day in front of Sam Bennett. But what a terrible accident that was. And other riders have actually come off their bike to go and help out. Oh, awful stuff. We said it was going to be difficult with so much real estate to play with. Everyone wanted a part of it. And I'm afraid this race, yet again, has taken a part of the sprinters. Caleb Ewan takes the day, bumps and bruises, as ever, it seems, on the Schelde Place.
So, Brad, let's start with the crash. Pascal Ackermann relegated. His move was identified as being the reason for the crash. It felt to me to be a little bit harsh, and Bora Hansgrohe, his team, felt the same.
Well, I mean, it's a sprint, isn't it? There's so many, we talk about this all the time, there's so many things. I mean, Ackermann did swing... So he's left or right, I can't remember, I think it was to the right, wasn't it? And did sort of take his wheel away, but it is, that's bunch sprinting, unfortunately. You know, it's sort of easy to say, you know, riders maybe should take a bit more responsibility, but sprinters will do anything to win, and they don't mean to do it. you know, it's in the heat of the moment. Sagan pulled a similar move today in the sprint with Demar. And fortunately, no one really noticed it because he didn't impede anyone. But it's kind of, that's what sprinting is. It's unfortunate. Do you do anything about it? I don't know. How can you take away what is essentially a sprinter's biggest asset in that risk-taking, you know, fraction of a second thoughts and decisions? It's very, very difficult one to manage that.
Ackermann was relegated. Caleb Ewan with the win, as we heard Carlton call it for us there.
Yeah.
Nicolo Bonifazio second, and Brian Cockard eventually bumped up to third. Adam Blythe was saying on commentary that it's a horribly uneven road surface, just going back to the finish. He was saying it's got a lip like you'd have from the road up to the driveway at home.
If you looked over it, the finish line is put, the finish straight runs across a, what is it, half of a roundabout. So you see the half of the roundabout, but it's all just ever so slightly done. So it's kind of, you cross a bike's path. It's just the kind of the way it's done. And it's just enough of a lip over each bump. It forms little speed bumps when you're sprinting at 60, 70 K an hour.
I mean, it's an easy win to move that, right?
There's a reason they probably haven't done it. And I think it's something to do with, it's normally, it's either a national holiday or something, when it's normally on this, like some sort of holiday.
Yeah.
Midweek on the Wednesday in April. And it's a street lined with bars and things like that. And I think it's got to finish outside of a certain bar or point where a lot of the funding comes from for the race, really. So to move it back, you'd miss that finish race. Quite a festive celebration that day.
Yeah. I mean, given the season we've had with all of the crashes we've seen because of the lack of concern for rider safety,
yeah,
infrastructure changes like this, which would seemingly be so easy to do,
yeah,
they've got to be a priority, haven't they?
You'd think so. But I think it's been 10 years now. There's been a crash every year on that finish straight and they've never done anything about it. I can't see them doing anything about it now. Like most things, this time next week it'll be forgotten.
Yeah.
And no one will act on it.
Does it prove that money matters more than the rider's health?
Well, I think in this case, probably yes, because these are all independent races. They probably struggle enough to get the race on anyway, financially. And actually, if you gave the choice to the riders, you know, do you want to lose Skelde Price or are you happy for it to finish in the same straight? They'd all probably say finish in the same straight.
Yeah, for sure. So the man who took it today was Caleb Ewan. Second, Nicolo Bonifazio. Third, Ackermann, as we say, relegated after his move as the sprint lit up. Ewan, I mean, he would have been one of the favourites today, Brad.
Yeah, I think Brian called it in comms, actually. When he saw it, he said straight away he's going to win. He's... seems to be well and truly recovered from the Tour de France. He had quite a tough time the second part of the Tour, didn't he? And was quite fatigued and didn't really get in much sprints. But Sam Bennett didn't get a look in today, did he?
Eighth. And we might have expected more from him.
Maybe.
After taking green at the Tour.
His team seemed to hit the front too early and kind of he ran out of teammates quick.
Unusual for them not to get it right.
Well, it's hard because there were so many riders there and so many teams present. Everyone's quite fresh at the end because it's not a very strenuous day. And, you know, it's probably why there's so many crashes, because there's a lot of riders there, really. It's just one of them, really. I suppose it's unfortunate we're not seeing the likes of Demar, Sagan, Gaviria, Caleb, Sam, all in the same, where we normally would this time of year.
Yeah.
Which, that would be some sprint.
Stretched so thinly elsewhere. Just back to Cav briefly. So we saw on the road on Eurosport earlier, goodbye Cav, or thanks Cav, rather. Thanks and goodbye. In a way, is it better that we, as fans... watching the race, know that this is sort of Cav's last hurrah, as it were.
Well, we don't know if it is, do we? It's kind of a bit umanar at the moment. We don't know.
If it is, we want to be able to say goodbye to him and we want to be able to do his amazing career justice.
But he doesn't want to go yet.
He doesn't.
As he said today.
So he's sort of caught betwixt and between.
I think this is what's so hard for him is it's, this decision is being made for him. And that's not very nice, really. I don't think that's where it's very nice. You know, a rider in his position, he wants to be able to call time when he's ready. And I feel like this position, this has been put on him and someone else is making that decision for him.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the emotion's coming from, is the lack of control in that.
Yeah, he's so used to being able to call the shots.
Yeah, and it's just a shame because he wants to, like you said, I think there's a place within the sport somewhere for him in a team. It's not necessarily about winning. And it's a shame, really.
Yeah.
You know, as we saw today, he was in the break all day. And if you mark Cavendish's break, he got dropped for the break. They stopped focusing on the break. The TV camera stayed on Mark. You know,
that alone tells you something. But
that's the kind of exposure that Mark brings to the world of cycling.
But then are they doing that because they think that's the last time that
they've always done it because Mark's a superstar in the sport.
And which is why we're still talking about him now. Moving on to stage 12 tomorrow. We've mentioned it briefly already. It's lumpy as 204 kilometres, 3,800 metres of vertical gain, nine climbs, as I said, out of and back into Cesena Attico, starting and finishing in Marco Pantani's hometown.
Yeah, so it's tomorrow's going to be a bloody tough day. Pantani's training roads, to pay homage to him, they always take him up the climbs he used to love, and it's going to be like Liège-Bastogne-Liège tomorrow. It's going to be a tough, tough day for everyone.
Yeah. Funny old relationship Italy's got with Pantani, still.
They love him. You know, he's a cult hero.
Yeah.
He was a superstar on and off the bike.
But he was demonized.
Yeah, I mean, he was also a very flawed character, and he was quite traumatized and quite vulnerable. I think his vulnerability shone through, and I think Italy warmed to him for that and loved him for it. And he's never been forgotten.
And they literally finished outside of the hotel where he died in Rimini today.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
We're not expecting, or maybe we are, a rider of Pantani's caliber to take tomorrow, feature in the break tomorrow. Presumably it's an ideal route for the breakaway. So who might we be looking at?
I think the likes from behind. I think Nibali will be quite emotional tomorrow.
Yeah.
He's someone who thrives off that history of the sport. And he'd probably want to, someone like Vincenzo would want to win tomorrow for Pantani.
Could we be looking at another stage win for Filippo Ganna, perhaps, and Ineos? Cool. I mean, they sort of, as I said, found that
mojo. That'd be a big ask for tomorrow for Ganna, but, you know, never put anything past him.
Yeah.
But I think Nibali tomorrow. Pozzovivo, actually, could have a do.
Pozzovivo's up there on GC, yeah. It'd be good to see him giving it a go.
Sagan as well. I think Sagan's going to have a go, like you saw the other day.
Yeah. Just quickly before we go, Brad, a little bit of news on the Vuelta. The organisers have banned fans, or will ban fans,
bandfans.com
at the summit finishes.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Is that a token gesture?
Well, it shows you how bad it must be in Spain now, then the worry that they have, much like the race, this race, and not want to lose it.
Madrid's locked down again.
They're pleading with fans, you know, to you know, some common sense and just help them as much as possible. And please don't, you know, kind of go up the climbs. And
Yeah. Is it more this far out? Well, I say this far out. We're only a week or so away from the race actually starting. But is it more of the organisers signposting that, look, we're doing all we can here, rather than it being in any sort of practical way?
Yeah, they're not actually stopping fans going up, are they? They're asking them not to go up.
Yeah, presumably if one actually lives up there, then there's very little they can do to stop you from going to the summit in the first place. Well, look, Brad, on that note, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Bradley Wiggins Show by
Thank
Eurosport.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to our sponsor too, Lacquer Bicycle Insurance.
Lacquer.
Brad, social media, we can follow you at...
So we go.
Eurosport, you can find on Twitter at Eurosport_UK. Plus, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you as ever to Podcast Pete, our producer.
Podcast Pete, sponsored by River Island.
Our producer, Pete Burton. And finally, from me, Graham Wilgos, it's goodbye. If you've enjoyed the show, please subscribe, share your thoughts and rate us wherever you get your podcasts.
Cheers. Thanks for that.
Brad, you'll be back tomorrow
be
for
back
a bonus
tomorrow.
Podcast.
I will be back.
And I'll see you on Sunday. Looking forward to it.
And I won't look back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.